Welcome to Practical Mathematics from Christian Leaders Institute, and as you can tell by the screen in front of you, we're going to be looking at something called polynomial notation, and then following that we're actually going to look at a little bit of software that's either free or easily affordable for helping you with your accounting. And we may actually, as we go there, look at a few useful concepts in terms of what is and is not things that we count as accounting. So let's start with polynomial notation. And that sounds kind of like weird and arcane and just a little bit unfamiliar, but it's actually not. You remember when we started this course, we started with integers, adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing, all those things. And you started with the ones digit, and you moved to the left to the tens digit, you moved further to the left, got the hundreds digit, and then the thousands digit. And each of the digits in a number were a multiplier times some power of 10, 1, 100, 1,000, 10,000, 10,000, etc. And then as you moved to the right of the decimal point, you had the decimal point, and then you had the 1/10 digit, the 1/100 digit, and it went down as increasingly large powers of 10, negative powers of 10, all the way out that way. Well, hey, that's the concept. You start at the ones, you go left, tens, hundreds, thousands, and so on. Starting at the ones digit, moving to the right, tenths, hundreds, thousands, digits. That basically is a gargantuan polynomial. Okay, it's a sum of powers of 10, each multiplied by some digit. Now, we tend to call those digits coefficients. I don't know where they got the name from. I don't really care. It's what I've grown up calling it. But those are coefficients of a particular power of 10. So in the particular case of decimal notation, here's the formula. And now you'll notice there's a minus sign from minus infinity all the way up to plus infinity. And the AI, those are just the coefficients, the things that you multiply 10 to the ith power of. You remember when I was talking about this, I said we keep boxes full of zeros around, whole buckets and rooms and pockets full of them. Now that's for these AI, which are, frankly, almost all going to be zeros. There'll be a few positives. But this is actually the formula for polynomial notation in base 10. Okay, the fact I said in base 10 should worry you. Would worry most people because they're going to wonder where I'm going next. And the answer is quite simple. There is nothing specifically sacred about the number 10. You can do another representation, still from minus to plus infinity, the coefficient a sub I of x to the ith power, whatever you want x to be. Now, inside of your computer, x is 2. We use binary notation. At one time, people who were doing calculations that would relate to computers but didn't want to do it in binary, we'd use something called octal. What that would be is x would be 8, so it would be a sub I, 8 to the ith power. Now, for whatever reason, we use something called hexadecimal. That's base 16, a sub I, x to the I. Hexadecimal is wonderful. You can convert it to and from binary very quickly and easily. You just cluster 4 binary digits together, and that would be translated right into the hexadecimal. Really nice. And the other nice thing about hexadecimal is you can represent larger numbers more easily. So, for instance, 67 in base 10. In base 16, that's only 43. Now, when you're using other bases, okay, base 10 is the implicit one you use all the time. But if you're using other bases for numbers, like base 2 or base 16 or whatever, you're generally right here as a subscript, you'll put whatever base it's in. So base 2, base 8, base 16, base 32, base 12. Believe it or not, people have talked about using base 12 instead of base 10. Why? Very simply. Unlike 10 that you can only divide by 2 and 5, you can divide 12 evenly by 2, 3, 4, and 6. It's easier to split the numbers up. I think it would be unworthy of shifting over to that. There's a whole bunch of really chaos and confusion that that would create. Whole books would have to be rewritten just to get the numbers right. Probably not going to happen, but it's a fun thought. Now, you're probably looking at this going, wow, really? And why do I care? Okay, I'm a math geek. I get that. And you know, for the most part, unless you're a computer jockey, I happen to like programming my computer, or unless you're just a math freak, and on that score I'm guilty as charged as well, it's hard to see the use for it. But actually, there is a rather interesting, if a little bit goofy, use for it, and that's called counting on your fingers. You remember when you were a kid, you know, you'd have your fist, and you'd go 1, 2, 3, 4, and you'd flip out fingers and thumbs, and you could count up to 10 things, and wow, that was pretty cool. Well, there's another way of doing it, and that's to count on your fingers in binary. A finger down, that's a 1. A finger up's a 0. Let me show you what's going on here. Your right pinky finger, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512. I mean, just on my right hand alone, I can pull up to counting to 31, throw in my left hand, and if you add all of these numbers up, that would be all of my fingertips touching down, it's 1,023. Man, if you're counting more than a couple of hundred, you need better tools. But still, you can get more than 10. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And as I'm doing it, I'm tapping my fingers on the table. I've practiced this, and I actually will use this to count. So if this finger's down, this one's up, down, down, and the rest are up, that's number 13. 8 plus 4 plus 1. Your one thumb down, this finger down, and all the S up, that's 40. You see what I'm driving at? Little practice, and it's amazing how much you can do counting on your fingers in binary. So that's an actual real-world approach with polynomial notation. Is it silly? A little bit. On the other hand, I can sit there with my hands down at my side, touch my fingers to my leg in binary, and count, and you probably wouldn't even know I was counting what was coming in the door or going across the room or whatever. Fascinating. Okay, fascinating to me. Maybe not to real people. But that is a practical use. So let's get out of that. And let's go to something a little bit more practical and look at accounting. We're looking at assets here. Now you've noticed three different things here. Current assets. So that's the cash on your hands or cash equivalents. What's a cash equivalent? An uncashed check. A money order, okay? Short-term receivables, money that you're owed and expect to get paid in the next month or so, but you haven't gotten yet. Your inventory is an asset. How many things you've got? I've got 84 things in my bin, and I've got 3, you know, widget frames. You remember that from earlier. What's actually there. And things that you've paid for that haven't been delivered yet. Prepaid expenses, your advance payment for whatever. Okay, those are current assets. Some assets are fixed. Okay, furniture, equipment, the actual physical plant, your house, your factory, whatever. Other property, like, for instance, the desk I'm sitting at is a fixed asset. My computer is a fixed asset. I have a car downstairs that's a fixed asset. And then something called accumulated depreciation. That's a complex accounting term. I think it's complex anyway. You may not. Which is basically the allowance made in the reduction of value of some fixed asset that's being used over time. It's the reduction in value from wear or tear. That actually is an asset in accounting. Then there's other things. You've got deposits, you know, the certificates of deposit, things like that. Long-term investments, stocks, bonds, or whatever that you bought. Those are all assets that you want to be tracking. I mean, you want to know where you're at in terms of what you have. You don't need to know it every minute of every day, but you need to have an idea of it periodically and reassess it so that you know, again, where you're standing. Then there's the liabilities. There's the current things, things that you owe for that you're expecting to pay in the next little bit. Accrued expenses of other sorts, like the accrued payroll tax, the accrued sales tax if you're selling things, okay? Your liability on payroll, okay? Maybe you pay every 2 weeks. At the end of 1 week, you've got a liability for the money that is going to have to be paid in the not distant future to those employees that make it possible. Okay, so that's a liability. Deferred revenue. You've already got the order and it's paid for, but you have not yet delivered the good or performed the service. They've paid in advance. That's a liability. You've got to get something out there to make it appropriate to put that in your resources. Of course, refundable advances. Somebody may have sent you money saying, okay, I'm going to do this. That may be taken back later. That's a possible liability. The lines of credit that you owe, consider that debt. And then, of course, the more formal debts on like your building and everything, that's a liability. You may have sold bonds. That's a long-term liability. It's going to take you years to pay that off. There's your mortgage. Again, that's going to be a long-term payoff. Most mortgages are 10 to 30 years. Some places as long as 100. Loans that are going to be hanging around for over a year. That's another liability. Okay, so you need to, or at least want to, know where we're at in terms of all of this stuff, because that's how you're going to use what figures you're going to use, I should say, to decide whether or not you have extra resources or whether you're in debt and need to work your way out of it. So let's look at the whole concept of net assets. Your net assets, the stuff that's not got a claim against it, is your actual physical assets minus your liabilities. You want those to be more than zero, okay? In fact, you want them to be significantly more than zero, because that way you've got a little bit of a cushion against, well, the little surprises life throws at you. If your assets are less than zero, then you need to move in a direction, either by reducing costs, increasing revenue, or maybe deciding that this business has got to go and liquidating it. It's whatever. But you want to know where you're at so that you know that it's time to do cost reduction, or you know it's time to perhaps raise your prices, or whatever. And this gives you the tools, the mental tools that allow you to look at this kind of question. Now, I promised you that we would be looking at software packages, and we're going to do that. Here's one of them, GNU Cash. Sounds interesting. It has a very interesting property. You notice the cost? Free. I like that. Here's where you can download it from, www.gnu.org. It'll run on Windows, it'll run on Macs, it'll run on Linux, it'll run pretty much anywhere. Some of the things it does, you may require Excel for. That's some. If you don't have Excel and don't want to go get Excel, maybe GNU Cash is not for you. But there are other options out there. there's Adminsoft accounts. It's free too. Obviously, I'm focusing on free stuff first. Here's where you can download it for. Again, download it, I believe, for nothing. It'll run on Windows. Some Mac systems and maybe some Linux systems might run it. I wouldn't care to count on that. So if you're a Mac or a Linux, this may not be for you. It does full double entry accounting, which means you put your money here, it will put that money in an appropriate place. It'll help you with management, with payroll, if that's what you need. So it's got some good points to it. And again, like I say, one really good point, free. Then there's BS1. Look, I'm just quoting the names. I don't make these names up, all right? It's another one that's free. Here's where you can download it from. Oh, my goodness, that's a big, long line. Obviously, this is one, if you look at this, when you see enterprise like this, on the whole, what that means is, this is one that if you're a small change, you're not a big business, they'll let you have it for nothing, but they're hopeful that if you expand to the point where you need fuller capacity, that you'll buy it. So it can be purchased as well. But I'm focused on the free version here. I didn't get any input on that. I could not find on their website, and maybe it's because I'm just not looking right. I couldn't find anywhere that specified what operating system it'll run on. Most things will run on Windows. Okay, that's because the Windows platform is the single largest, most heavily used platform there is for a number of reasons. So we'll assume it works on Windows, but we don't know where it really will work. You'll have to check to see on their website. Now, it can do a lot of different things. Okay, it's got a wide number of functions. Look and see what it will do for you before you start playing with it. Lazy 8 Ledger. Another free one, okay? This is from SourceForge. Now, SourceForge deserves a little concept point here. SourceForge is a website that represents a large number of programmers, many of them professionals, who will create freeware. You can download it. You can use it. If you want, they will even let you have the code that it's written in, and you can modify it to your preferences, although you do that at your own risk. I mean, if you make a mistake and you're modifying the code and it trashes your computer, sorry, Charlie. They will not be liable for it. I've downloaded a large number of things from them, everything from data compression programs through time check programs to who knows what all. SourceForge is a great place to look if you want freeware and you're not picky. So there's where you get it from. SourceForge has got Lazy 8 Ledger. Now the program itself is written in Java, and that's true of a lot of the SourceForge material. And Java supposedly will run on absolutely anything. I mean, your toaster uses Java. Okay, maybe you don't have a toaster. Maybe your toaster is one of the ones that doesn't use Java. But toasters use Java, to say nothing of computers. And a lot of computer systems have, have Java in the background running some of the programs. So the chances of it running on your system are really very, very good. It will do double entry system, which we kind of emulated on the spreadsheet. It'll generate lots of kinds of reports, which may be useful, especially in the ministry. People that are contributing to a ministry may want to know where the money's going. People may come in and inspect your records, wanting to know where those money's going. And that could be government individuals wanting to look and see what you're doing. So if it can generate reports, that's pretty important, perhaps. And it does include a tutorial. That's pronounced, here's how you use this thing. Not a bad thing. So, let's move forward. Ledger Lite. It's another free one. Here's where you get it from. And again, you get on the site and you just download it. It'll only work on Windows. You can get account balances whenever you need it. Many of these other programs will ask you how often do you want to do your balances calculated out. Some of them will have presets. Usually that preset will be once every month or once every, more likely every 3 months. But you know, if you need it today, right up to date, LedgerLite will do that for you. So that's kind of an advantage to LedgerLite if you happen to need that capacity. Here's another one, Front Accounting ERP. It is free, but they will request a donation. You don't have to put one in there. But again, you're helping support the system's upkeep, you know, the people that help correct mistakes in it, help give it new capacities, all of that stuff. You can get it from this website, right there. And this one will run anywhere, Windows, Mac, Linux. I presume it'll run on Ubuntu as well, which I believe is Linux-based. One advantage of this one is multiple users can access the account. So if you've got four or five people that are part of your business or part of your ministry that need to be able to access this, this may be your choice. Okay, this might be an extremely useful capacity that it has. Again, that depends on factors I don't know. And those are the factors that your personal reality contains that I have no way of knowing. Now, a couple of other points. There's a lot of assigned reading attached to this. Several different places have had information on this that we've derived this from. I want you to go ahead and read those. Of course, I want you to read all of the assignments, but this one especially, because there are other software packages that they'll talk about. Not all of them are free. I also need you to know I checked some of the links that were in the reading. The ones I gave you, when I created this lecture, I had tested them, they worked, and you could download it. And if it was labeled for free or for free plus request for contribution, that's the way it was when I tried them. You may be watching this 6 months, a year, 5 years down the road from when I record it. That may change. At least look. Some of the packages that they're going to mention in the readings, they will have an upfront cost. You'll pay for it once. You'll buy the software. Maybe you'll have to later buy an update. Maybe not. Other ones, they want bucks every month. But many of the ones that have a request, they will let you try it first. And that's an important thing. Whatever system you decide to try, try it first. See if it works for you for a couple of weeks. Most even purchasable programs in accounting software will very often have a period of a couple of weeks or a couple of months where you can try it on for size. See whether it does what you need it to do. See if it really fits your needs. And if it doesn't, you can get out of it without having to pay a dime. You'll remember in an earlier lecture I talked about cost leakage, trying something out on the free period and then suddenly having to pay for it is a leakage of funds that you need to stay on top of. And a lot of places make a lot of money off of that kind of thing. Now, they're not being evil setting you up. They're just saying, okay, we're going to do that. Okay, so there's some looks at accounting software if you want to use it. Again, earlier we did create, I think it was in Lesson 2, a spreadsheet that could do a lot of functions for you. And when I was doing that, I mentioned the existence of software packages that could be had free or at low cost, and now you've seen a handful of them. So, rather a shorter unit, but one that's got a lot of meat in it. I want you to go ahead and reread the readings, maybe read them two or three times, just to make sure that you know what's going on with some of these software packages. And we'll talk to you in Unit 12.